KBOO Portland, good morning. It's 8:59. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. That's up next at 10, Air Cascadia with Chris Andre. And at 10:15 on Flashpoints today, I'll hear a report from Haiti on the effects of Hurricane Matthew and the devastating U.S. policy toward the poverty-stricken nation. Plus, an interview with Walter Riley of the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. Press Watch, next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certifications requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The events committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meeting in writing, please email monica@kboo.org.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. At 11 a.m. AST, the center of Hurricane Nicole was located near latitude 32.3 north, longitude 64.6 west. That's Bermuda. Nicole is moving towards the northeast near 16 miles an hour, and it's supposed to keep moving northeast. Maximum sustained winds are near 120 miles per hour. Not bad for an October hurricane, huh? Nicole is a Category 3 hurricane on the Saffir-Simpson hurricane wind scale. Gradual weakening is forecast. Nicole is a large hurricane. This is from NOAA, National Hurricane Center. The hurricane force winds extend outward up to 70 miles from the center, and tropical storm force winds extend outward up to 185 miles. An automated surface station on Pearl Island in Bermuda measured sustained winds of 87 miles an hour with a gust to 119. So that's what Bermuda is going through right now. And I'll be talking about global warming storms on this show. Let me pass on a little bit from AccuWeather. We'll continue. Hurricane Nicole will continue to lash Bermuda with destructive winds and flooding rain through Thursday. Currently a Category 3 hurricane and briefly attained Category 4 status. They write, while Bermuda is often affected by hurricanes each year, major hurricanes rarely pass close to the islands. Although, according to the National Hurricane Center, only seven major hurricanes have passed within 40 nautical miles of Bermuda since records began in 1851. This is the first time that two Category 4 hurricanes occurred in the Atlantic during October. Matthew is a Category 4 hurricane, but also reached Category 5 status earlier this month in the Caribbean. And Nicole has been a tropical storm since the 4th of this month. It's just been out there spinning. So the hurricane is happening, and speaking of wind and rain, a global warming monster is headed here in Cascadia today. Check the weather satellites on the web, and you will see a bizarre sight. A typhoon near Japan is feeding a jet stream storm system that is aimed right at us. It reminds me of when, as a little kid, I would go into Sears Roebuck with my parents and see the summer air conditioning displays. In order to show the power of the fans, the salespersons would rig up a clear tunnel of plastic across the store, quivering with refrigerated air from a window unit. On the left of the screen, when you look at the satellite feeds, you can see the typhoon feeding a band of clouds that extends 4,000 miles to right here in Portland, Oregon. So expect some rain today and tomorrow and the next day. RobertScribbler.com writes, as the U.S. East Coast is still reeling from the impacts associated with Hurricane Matthew, the Pacific Northwest is just now confronting its own potential extreme climate event. For a 4,000-mile-long river of moisture streaming off ex-super typhoon Songda in the Pacific Ocean is now firing a barrage of storms at Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and British Columbia, a series of storms that could, over the next 5 days, dump as much as 2 feet of rainfall over parts of this region. So, speaking for myself, maybe it's time to clear out that storm drain. Jet stream winds, he writes, running across the Pacific now range between 180 and 220 miles per hour. These strong winds are producing a powerful storm track even as they are tapping a vast plume of tropical moisture over the eastern Pacific. Embedded in this moisture plume is the rain-rich ex-super typhoon Songda. As the strong upper-level winds pull in Songda and draw on the extreme moisture bleed rising up off the record hot waters of the Pacific Ocean, forecasters expect a resulting atmospheric river to run 4,000 miles across the Pacific Ocean and deliver storm after powerful storm to the Pacific Northwest. The NOAA model forecasts now show as much as 22 inches of rain falling upon parts of this region over the next 7 days. However, with so much moisture loading up the atmosphere, it's possible that locally higher amounts of rainfall will occur. So turning to the NOAA again, here's today's global warming forecast. Rain today. The rain could be heavy at times. High near 61. Chance of precipitation 100%. New precipitation amounts between 3/4 and 1 inch possible. Tonight, rain. Heavy at times. Steady temperature around 61. Breezy. South wind 15 to 23. Gusts as high as 34. Chance of precipitation 100%. Friday, rain. Friday night showers. Saturday, rain. Gusts as high as 39 miles per hour. So that's what we're in for. And if you want to talk about global warming, I'll be here during this hour. And I have some other topics to bring up as well. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. Robert Scribbler and other observers have noted that not only is there more energy in the ocean, there is more moisture in the air because the atmosphere itself is larger. The atmosphere heated up. It's physically larger, and it also holds, because it is warmer, it holds more moisture. This is just a physical fact. Unavoidable. This is the way it is now. There's more moisture in the air, so when you get a storm, you're likely to get more rainfall than you would before. And that is why I can confidently call this event a global warming event. All such events are. Normal is gone. This is not the Holocene era anymore. It's the Anthropocene. And the Anthropocene is going to be marked by these extreme events. Number to call, 503-231-8187. The city council got kind of crazy yesterday. And you may have noticed, if you're listening to Democracy Now!, they mentioned the Portland City Council. Yep, it's national news. Why? Because again, the city council locked down. They excluded commenters from the city council chambers. They have taken up different rooms in order to avoid public comment. Dan Handelman of Copwatch has commented a couple of times that they may be violating open meetings laws by doing so. And why? So that they can pass the contract with the police union and pass it without any further comment. But it was certainly in the news yesterday. From Dan Handelman's Copwatch email, the council passed the ordinance to approve the Portland Police Association contract yesterday, 3-1. Novick voted no, and Saltzman was out. Don't Shoot Portland protesters, many of whom had camped out overnight before the hearing, intended to continue occupying City Hall after the vote was taken just before noon, but were forced out by police, who pushed people and used pepper spray to clear the building. The protests continued, eventually drawing in dozens of riot cops, PPB and sheriff's deputies, who pushed people onto the sidewalk across the street and used pepper spray on a few who stepped off the curb, arresting at least four people. Skipping ahead, he wrote, "I should point out right away that because it was not an emergency ordinance, it technically doesn't take effect for 30 days. And in fact, if a gutsy member of the council who voted yes could find two others to vote yes, they could vote to reverse the decision within the next 10 days. Backing up a bit on the council meeting, he writes, protesters began chanting during earlier agenda items. The mayor responded by calling a recess. A few minutes later, much to our surprise in the chambers, the council showed up on the video screen inside the Rose Room on the third floor. They'd clearly set up a contingency plan to have another remote meeting like they had last week, which again is potentially a violation of open meetings law. Amanda Frentz made a 20-minute speech during which she name-checked Dan Handelman, Joanne Hardesty, and especially Teresa Rayford as voices she respected. She listed most of the groups who'd written in and admitted the vast majority of emails she got on this topic were to vote no. Dan Handelman wrote, "I wonder if she would have been able to make the same talk if she'd had to look us all in the eye instead of being isolated in a small room on video camera instead." Her ultimate argument was that she had to do what she felt was right, spewed the party line about needing to have more police, and voted yes. Steve Novick based his no vote on lack of certainty about funding the pay increase, which conveniently will be better known after the election next month. And Dan wrote, "I've been doing this for a long time. I don't ever remember city council recusing themselves to a location where the public could not enter. I'm amazed at how much they're willing to use repressive tactics to shut down opposition to their policies. And in some ways, I'm most disturbed how they're putting out half-truths and misdirection to make their rhetorical points." That's from Dan Handelman's email and from Copwatch. And the time is 9:11. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Press Watch. I'm Teresa Mitchell. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. Headline from Oslo, from Radio Havana, Cuba, Norway, says talks have begun with Washington over a long-standing U.S. wish to deploy Marines on the Nordic country's soil. The Norwegian Defense Ministry said that assessments have taken place within the military to look at the options for additional training, storage, and this kind of thing. Norway's Defense Ministry stressed that the troops will probably be deployed on a rotational basis and that permanent deployment is not a question. When the plan goes through, 300 U.S. Marines will be stationed in the Vernus military base near Trondheim, about 1,000 kilometers from the Norwegian-Russian border. The work is underway, but the initiative has not been, that's about 610 miles if I remember correctly. The work is underway, but the initiative has not yet been debated politically in the Ministry of Defense, Norwegian defense minister said. So we do not have any more detailed answers at this time. Any concrete proposals will naturally be handled by the government and parliament in the usual way. The deployment will strain already tense relations with Russia as it goes against a vow made by Norway while NATO was founded in 1949 not to allow the deployment of foreign combat forces on its soil unless the country was under the threat of attack or, according to a later amendment, for military drills. Moscow and NATO have been at odds over an array of issues, including the crisis in eastern Ukraine and the Western military alliance buildup around Russia's borders. That's from Pavel Jacomino and Radio Havana, Cuba. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Leslie is on the air.
Hi, good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
About the police contract vote, I'm online looking at a page from OPB, and they're very carefully at the top of their article list the people arrested. They give their full names, they give their ages, they give their charges, and they devote, you know, a full sentence to each person, and they have their name bolded. They have their name in bold with next to a bullet point. So just to let the world know that you were arrested. And then when you go further down in the OPB article, you finally get to how the vote broke down with Fritz, Fish, and Hales voting for the police union contract and only Steve Novick voting against it, citing fiscal concerns and saying that Dan Saltzman wasn't there. And as far as I see, the only person up for election again is, I believe, the only person who will be running in November is Novick. And even him, I'm not interested in voting for him. I'm pretty much looking at a straight green ticket, trying to find all the green candidates I can. So I have to see who's running against him, who is in the Green Party, because even his opposition seems pretty weak and cowardly to the police contract. So,
all right. Well, thanks for that information. I'm also going to be talking about Measure 97. So as long as you're on the line, do you have anything to say about that?
I plan to vote for 97. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of the TV commercials. They're pretty interesting, but I don't see any reason why, particularly Wells Fargo, but also Monsanto can't, you know, pay taxes in the state of Oregon, can't pay their fair share. So, yeah, I will be supporting 97. And that argument, the taxes will be passed on to consumers. You could say that of any tax. You could say that of any corporate tax. So what do we do in response? Not tax them at all? That to me is an absurd argument.
I'll be saying more about that in just a moment. Have you been seeing more pro or anti 97 advertisements?
I think I've been seeing more anti, slightly more, yeah. But there's a good number of pro ads in there, and they seem to be well done. They're well made. Some good pro 97 ads out there too on corporate TV.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that information.
Okay, bye bye.
Time is 9:16. You're listening to Press Watch. I'm inviting your calls, comments, and questions, 503-231-8187. And as I was saying, I'm going to be getting to Measure 97 shortly. First, a couple of more headlines for the news you're not supposed to know in just one moment. Had to adjust the mic there. So, from antiwar.com, Jason Deitz writes, the USS Nitze, a guided missile destroyer, has fired a series of cruise missiles at the Yemeni coast today, targeting and destroying three radar stations along the Red Sea under the control of the Shiite Houthi movement. The attacks come after two separate reports in recent days of missiles fired from Yemen coming close to another destroyer, the USS Mason. The ship was not hit in either case, and while the Houthis denied involvement, the Pentagon claimed evidence of their involvement and claimed the Mason may have been target painted by the Houthi radar. Speaking for myself, this certainly reminds me of the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Returning to Deitz's article, the Navy's statement on tonight's cruise missile attacks insisted that the destruction of the radar sites would prevent the Houthis from being able to track or target ships off their coast. The Pentagon added that there was little risk of civilian casualties in the attacks. While the Houthis have attacked warships participating in the Saudi-led naval blockade of Yemen, it is unknown why they would attack the USS Mason in the first place, he writes, with a ship apparently just passing through the area into the Red Sea. At the same time, it is unclear why the USS Mason is still hanging out off the coast of Yemen days later if it indeed was meant to be just passing by. The Houthis have suggested the reports blaming them are an attempt to distract from the weekend incident in which a Saudi warplane attacked a funeral home in the Yemeni capital, killing 155 people. The reports have indeed been successful at that, and AP reports that the missiles fired sort of near the USS Mason were sort of similar to Iranian missiles. And that has added another layer of intrigue to the story, rendering the Saudi war crimes all but forgotten on the front page. You can find that at antiwar.com and much more. And speaking for myself, meanwhile, the Saudi Air Force continues its months-long war atrocity on one of the poorest nations in the world, dropping U.S.-supplied white phosphorus bombs with U.S.-supplied airplanes and U.S.-supplied satellite targeting, melting whole families as they scream in horror and vow revenge. From The Intercept, Naomi LaChance writes, or maybe it's LaChance, when a group of labor activists demanded in 2014 that Hillary Clinton use her influence with Walmart, where she sat on the board of directors for 6 years, to raise workers' wages. Clinton's top aides turned to Walmart's former top lobbyist for advice on how to respond, and in a series of highly paid appearances after leaving the State Department, Clinton praised the company's practices and spoke fondly of its founder in speeches that were kept secret from the public. Walmart, America's largest private employer, has become a top target of progressives because of its aggressive union busting and notoriously low wages and lack of benefits. But emails documenting a continued warm relationship between Clinton and the massive retailer are among thousands posted by WikiLeaks over the past week from Hillary Clinton campaign chairman John Podesta's Gmail account. One email document is an 80-page list prepared by Clinton's own research department detailing the most potentially damaging quotes from secret speeches. The last four pages are devoted to Walmart. During a November 2013 speech at an event sponsored by the Canadian pharmacy firm London Drugs, Clinton seemed to suggest that Walmart stores were particularly good for people who lived in the nation's less cosmopolitan areas. Quoting, "Those stores, you know, you don't have to agree with everything Walmart does, I don't, but those stores served a real purpose, not only for employment and low-cost goods, but because they became a way for people who wanted to see what else was available to them could go and look. Products that never were readily available in a lot of those places before," end quote. She continued, quote, "So this spirit of community that I think is absolutely essential to the maintenance of our democracy, our freedom, our strength, is alive and well across North America, particularly among young people," end quote. Clinton's suggestion that Walmart is somehow helping foster community stands in contrast with how the retail giant has devastated local and family businesses as it has expanded across the country. The chain's use of cheap Chinese-produced products has also sucked money out of local communities and helped to expand the U.S. trade deficit. The Economic Policy Institute estimates that the Walmart-based trade deficit with China alone eliminated or displaced over 400,000 U.S. jobs between 2001 and 2013. The one group that has really benefited from Walmart is the heirs of its late founder, Sam Walton. Today, the Walton family is worth $130 billion. Altogether, they are wealthier than the bottom 40% of Americans combined. Sam Walton's daughter, Alice Walton, as well as a grandson, Sam Rawlings Walton, gave $350,000 to the Hillary Victory Fund. And there's more of that article at TheIntercept.com. Again, it's by Naomi Lachance. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, and I am going to read the text of Measure 97, which is an amendment to ORS 317.090, Oregon law, and it reads as follows. As used in this section, Oregon sales means A. If the corporation apportions business income under ORS 314.650 to 314.665 for Oregon tax purposes, the total sales of the taxpayer in the state during the tax year as determined for purposes of ORS 314.665B. If the corporation does not apportion business income for Oregon tax purposes, the total sales in this state that the taxpayer would have had as determined for purposes of ORS 314.665, if the taxpayer were required to apportion business income for Oregon tax purposes, or C, if the corporation apportions business income using a method different from the method prescribed by ORS 314.650 to 314.665, Oregon sales is defined, as defined by the Department of Revenue by rule. If the corporation is an agricultural cooperative, that is a cooperative organization described in Section 1381 of the Internal Revenue Code, Oregon sales does not include sales representing business done with or for members of the agricultural cooperative. 2. Each corporation or affiliated group of corporations filing a return under ORS 317.710 shall pay annually to the state for the privilege of carrying on or doing business by it within the state a minimum tax as follows. A. If Oregon sales properly reported on a return are A, less than $500,000, the minimum tax is $150. B, $500,000 or more but less than $1 million, the minimum tax is $500. C, $1 million or more but less than $2 million, the minimum tax is $1,000. $2 million or more but less than $3 million, the minimum tax is $1,500. $3 million or more but less than $5 million, the minimum tax is $2,000. $5 million or more but less than $7 million, the minimum tax is $4,000. $7 million or more but less than $10 million, the minimum tax is $7,500. $10 million or more but less than $25 million, the minimum tax is $15,000. Section I, with $25 million or more, but less than $50 million. The minimum tax is $30,000. $50 million or more, but less than $75 million. The minimum tax is $50,000. More than $25 million. The minimum tax is $30,000. $30,001 plus 2.5% of the excess over $25 million. Section K, $75 million or more, but less than $100 million. The minimum tax is $75,000. Section L, $100 million or more. The minimum tax is $100,000. Subsection B, if a corporation is an S corporation, the minimum tax is $150. 3. The minimum tax is not apportionable, except in the case of a change of a accounting periods, and is payable in full for any part of the year during which the corporation is subject to tax. Section 2. The amendments to the minimum tax made by Section 1 of this 2016 Act do not apply to any legally formed and registered benefit company. That term is defined in ORS 60.750. Legally formed and registered benefit company shall pay the minimum tax set forth in ORS 317.090 in effect prior to the passage of this 2016 Act. Section 3. All of the revenue generated from the increase in the tax created by this 2016 Act shall be used to provide additional funding for public early childhood and kindergarten through 12th grade education, health care, and services for senior citizens. Revenue distributed pursuant to this section shall be in addition to other funds distributed for public early childhood and kindergarten through 12th grade education, health care, and services for senior citizens. Section 4, the amendments to ORS 317.090 made by Section 1 of this 2016 Act and Sections 2 and 3 of this 2016 Act apply to the tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2017, Section 5. If any provision of the 2016 Act is held invalid for any reason, all remainings of this Act shall remain in place and shall be given full force and effect. So that is the entire Measure 97. And as you heard, it simply doesn't apply to small businesses. So now I invite your calls. James is on the air. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Are you still there, James?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What you got to say?
Well, I got a couple things to say. Number one, to anybody who's, you know, thinking about voting against 97, you know, a lot of the anti-commercials, they're bringing, I like how they bring on farmers, you know, like, you know, the whole small town appeal. But what most people don't realize is that Monsanto isn't everything. Even the farmers that we're, you know, that we trust to grow us fresh vegetables out there in the country, they're all subsidized by Monsanto, you know? So it's, yes, they're going to be hit hard because they're growing vegetables very cheaply through that whole thing. So it's like, of course Monsanto doesn't want to pay their fair share of tax. But I thought it was really interesting that Comcast got hit because they were censoring those Yes on 97 ads that were mentioning them, as well as Wells Fargo, Monsanto, Bank of America, everybody doing business here. So I think that people should take that into account too, that big businesses who are on the hit list for this measure are doing their best to knock it down. And I guess as far as yesterday, I tried to make it down there, but I couldn't get out of work early enough. I work with people with disabilities, so it's kind of hard. But, you know, I was really frustrated because this whole renewal contract for the police, you know, they're supposed to be wanting to develop, you know, accountable community policing, but this whole thing was developed without any public input whatsoever. You know, Charlie Hales developed it without public input. You know, he baited everybody into thinking there was going to be public input, only to have them shoved out over a few, you know, over a few water bottles being thrown. It was ridiculous. I was just livid yesterday. You know, and I read Joanne Hardesty's piece in Oregon Live about it, and it's just anyway. Yeah. So anyway, thank you for bringing it to us.
Thanks for that, James.
Yeah, no problem.
Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Among other things, I'm talking about Measure 97. And as I was mentioning, a great deal of money is coming into the state, some of it from the famous Koch brothers, Kang and Kodos. And I have some of their propaganda from defeat97.com, and I'll quote some from Vote Yes on 97.org as well. From defeat97.com, They write, Measure 97 is a tax on total sales, not profits, that would increase consumer costs for all types of products and services. So that is extremely deceptive. Actually, second half is simply a lie. Measure 97 is a tax on total sales because it's so easy to dodge a profits tax. So easy, in fact, that state of Oregon is the last state in the union, 50th among 50 in terms of corporate taxes. If you're wondering why the state has so much trouble funding schools, well, that is the reason. And second half says that that would increase consumer costs for all types of products and services. Simply a lie, because the law in a capitalist society is supply and demand. The demand goes up, so does the price. If the supply goes up, price goes down. Supply goes down, price goes up, etc. The fact that there's a tax on major corporations does not affect the costs of products and services nearly as much as supply and demand. And that's one of the first things we learned about a capitalist economy, isn't it? So they're really trying to pull the wool over your eyes with that. Second thing they write is Measure 797 would be the biggest tax increase in Oregon's history, $6 billion. Yes, it certainly would be, and it's about time, I would say, perfectly just. They write, Measure 97 is a deceptive hidden sales tax. This is just a lie. There's nothing deceptive about it. It's quite up front. I just read the entire thing. It's online. There's nothing hidden about it. I suspect what they mean, being rabid reactionary conservatives, is that prices of goods will go up again with this specious argument pretending that supply and demand is not the major factor in a price. So that's just a lie. Then they write, Measure 97 would especially hurt Oregon families, farmers, and small businesses who can least afford higher costs. Now, that statement on the face of it would seem to be backed up by an article in the Oregonian and Oregon Live by Jeff Manning, which mentions the Mid-Columbia Producers Co-op in Morrow, Oregon, which relies on a relatively low profit model because... And you have to go below the fold to find this out, because they're not just a grain co-op. That part of their business would be protected. They're a gas distributor, a gasoline distributor, gasoline and diesel. And I imagine if this tax hike goes through, it's going to mess up their profits under their current model. But, of course, they will change their model. I suspect they may have to get rid of their fuel distribution business or change the nature of it. They use a card lock, among other methods, to distribute gasoline and diesel and possibly other fuels. And they're able to do so quite cheaply, partly because of Oregon tax structure. So they'll probably have to change that. But the article in the Oregonian also seems to, well, it passes on their statements that they would just go under because of this tax. I think that is extremely unlikely because whereas... I can't say that I agree with their political attitude. I really doubt that they're dumb enough not to make the structural changes that would be required once the tax passes. So here we have a case of the Oregonian, well, owners and editors, really, selecting a story about one of the very few large businesses that would be affected in a way that could change the nature of the hiring situation, for example, there in Morrow, Oregon. Some pain, yeah, there's going to be some pain when this passes, obviously. But, pardon me, obviously not the way that they phrase it, especially hurt Oregon families, farmers, and small businesses. No, we're talking about a change that raises 2.5% gross sales above $25 million. So continuing with the defeat 97 point... defeat 97.com list. They write, Measure 97's badly designed tax on sales. They want you to think of sales tax. They want you to think, oh my God, I'm going to have to pay extra for laundry detergent. That's not true. Badly designed tax on sales would result on taxes on top of taxes. That's just a broad and meaningless statement. They write, Measure 97 would damage Oregon's economy and caused the loss of thousands of local jobs. That's just a speculation on their part. And they write, there's no guarantee the money would go to education or anything else. The legislature could spend it any way it chooses. And to answer that, I go back to the text of the proposed amendment, Measure 97. All of the revenue generated from the increase in the tax created by this 2016 act shall be used to provide additional funding for public early childhood and kindergarten through 12th grade education, health care, and services for senior citizens. Revenue distributed pursuant to this section shall be in addition to other funds distributed for public early childhood and kindergarten through 12th grade education, health care, and services for senior citizens. So that's a pants on fire lie. And that's what they've got, apparently, on the defeat 97.com. I can't see the 97 without saying point. Defeat97.com. That's the anti-Measure 97's, well, that's what they got. And vote yes on 97. By the way, your comments and questions are welcome here at 503-231-8187. Right. What will the measure do? Measure 97 increases the corporate minimum tax for the largest corporations doing business in Oregon. C corporations with more than $25 million in Oregon sales. By law, the measure dedicates new revenue to schools, healthcare, and senior citizens. And Wayne is on the air. Hello, Wayne.
Hello.
Hi, what you got to say? Hello.
Hi.
I'm sorry, I can't quite hear you, Wayne. Try again.
Okay, I just wanted to say it's kind of disingenuous of these groups, because if it were to affect prices as much as they say, then all you'd have to do is go to the upper end of that graph, go phone one of those states and say, what's the hamburger cost there? Hamburger size of the drink. And you'd find out that in those states it does not cost the $20 to run the McDonald's.
Wayne, I'm not quite able to understand what you're saying. Unfortunately, there's a bit of distortion. Could you possibly change your location or try a different line and call back in? And I'm very sorry about that, Wayne.
Okay.
Returning to vote yes on 97.org, by raising the minimum tax income for some of the world's largest corporations, we can invest in the Oregon that working families deserve. They write, why do we need to raise taxes on large and out-of-state corporations? Oregon families deserve good schools and affordable health care. We have the fourth lowest high school graduation rate in the nation. Nearly 300,000 Oregonians lack health coverage, and more seniors are retiring into poverty. Our schools and services are suffering because large corporations like Comcast, Monsanto, and Bank of America pay lower taxes here than anywhere else in the country. And there's more to that. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And LJ is on the air.
Hey, Teresa, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
How's retirement?
Oh, I love it. Absolutely.
All right, yes. All right, just FYI, corporations are spending $17 million to make sure that 97 gets defeated.
Yes, I was thinking as I came in that I wish that I had delineated some of that. I would like to say more than I know that, of course, the Koch brothers are in on this. But,
of course they are.
But, yeah, big corporations really don't want this tax to go through.
You bet.
And the reason, of course, is not because they're, you know, dually concerned with our welfare or because they care about jobs. Those are crocodile tears. They care about the fat salaries and profits that they have been raking in from the extremely low post-Reagan tax structure that we find in this swiftly becoming a third world nation.
All right. Second point about the no on 97 committee, giving people the impression that they're going to be paying more at the store. And that's a crock, because for Walmart to raise their prices is a ridiculous notion, because Walmart has to be competitive, right?
Well, they hate being competitive, so they try to wipe out all the competition in town when they move in. But
yeah, yes, they do.
When it comes down to it, they do actually have some competition. For example, they have competition from Amazon, where
yes,
you can order
do.
A great number of the products that they offer online and have delivered to your place.
And they have competition from Costco.
Yes.
And so on and so on and Scooby-Dooby-Doo. So anyway, don't be bamboozled and hoodwinked by these so-called TV ads that you see, because the Supreme Court of the United States of America have already decided that it's perfectly okay for a corporation to lie to you.
Charming, isn't it?
Well, God, Teresa, we live in a charming country.
I mean, it's how corrupt is corruption when corruption becomes legal?
Right. And believe me, Teresa, corruption is totally legal.
True that.
Welcome to America. Have a good day.
Thank you, LJ. Number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Continuing with the Yes on 97 campaign, who will pay the tax? Only the largest corporations doing business in Oregon. C corporations with more than $25 million in Oregon sales will pay the new minimum tax. In fact, a report from the Legislative Revenue Office shows that 85% of the revenue raised by the measure will be paid by corporations with more than $100 million in Oregon sales. Those are some of the largest corporations in the world. The vast majority of the more than 400,000 active businesses in Oregon will be unaffected by this measure. In fact, less than 0.25% of all businesses operating in the state will see their taxes go up. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Yes on 97 writes, what investments will a better Oregon allow us to make? By asking large and out-of-state corporations to pay their fair share in Oregon taxes, we could build a truly better Oregon. We could boost our graduation rates, make health care more accessible, and enable more seniors to stay in their homes longer. And so I want to talk about that assertion. Passing 97 would bring $6 billion, I think it's $6 billion, into the state coffers and would relieve the annual crisis for school funding. And that's, as I was saying, is appropriate because this state is dead last among the states when it comes to taxing corporations in that way. But that will remain only as true as we are vigilant and only as true as that process is transparent, because it is the nature of legislatures, and especially it is the nature of legislatures administrations in this post-journalism era to do whatever they can get away with, and what they can get away with is a heck of a lot. And this money could easily go, for example, in the manner of USAID to foreign countries. We hear about what a wonderful thing that is. That goes to U.S. corporations. It's a cash cow for U.S. corporations. Even the Red Cross is notoriously corrupt. And as I was mentioning last week, I would recommend that if you want to bring relief to Haiti, don't be paying the Red Cross. Give it to some other organization, possibly Doctors Without Borders, because they proved their corruption after the earthquake there in Haiti. They built maybe six blocks of houses, and that's it. They received many, many millions of dollars and did essentially nothing with it other than pay themselves and big contractors. That's corruption. That's disgusting. Frankly, I'm sure that there are international and national laws that are violated, and if they're not, there are moral laws that are violated. And those people should be held to account for it, but as far as I'm aware, they are not held to account. And that's the sort of thing that will happen to the corporate taxes coming into Oregon once we begin to tax them fairly. And also, the fact that it is a tax on sales is simply necessary. If you don't tax gross receipts, then you get the, oh, we only made a profit of $0. We made a negative profit this year, oh darn. And and that will come from corporations who have paid gigantic salaries. You can pay gigantic salaries and you don't call that profit. That's salary. Oh, that's the cost of doing business. Can't give you any of that money. And we know how gigantic those salaries are. This I believe, unless there is language in the great Nike prostitution agreement from a couple of years back, I believe this would actually make Nike Corporation pay some money. And I'm sure Phil Knight is against that. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. Been talking about Measure 97. Started off with the defeat97.com's assertions, which, as I mentioned, are absolutely taken as a whole, are entirely lies. Pardon me. And I'm concerned about this phenomenon because the fact is, when you get in early and often with an ad campaign, you can get people to talking and agreeing among themselves, and that's the dangerous part, that what you're saying is correct. When you get in early with an ad campaign, you can set the boundaries of the debate. And the big corporations know this. I've seen it before. For example, there was, I believe it was a Measure 6 many years ago. It was to shut down the Trojan nuclear power plant. And Portland General Electric didn't want that to happen because it would have affected their profits. And so they put up a huge campaign saying, oh my gosh, if this goes through, then it will cost you all kinds of money and you won't have the power from the plant and all this sort of thing. The whole time they were planning on shutting down the plant anyway because it was costing them too much money. That's the nature of nuclear power. It only exists on subsidies. It is too expensive to go forward. That is why you don't see nuclear power plants being built. It's not because, you know, people standing around with signs have prevented it. It's because it doesn't make money for the big investors, even with the subsidies. So this campaign went out, and people in Oregon were repeating that. And it cost many millions of dollars to pay. The whole trick was to get the people of Oregon to pay for the decommissioning of that radioactive plant. Cost a great deal of money. You paid it. And you paid it because you fell for the propaganda. And this is how the propaganda works. So I'm here to say this is what is going on with Measure 97. The number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187. And Janet is on the air.
Hello. Teresa, hi.
Hi.
I was listening to you reading the proposition, and I just have one question.
All right.
How do we know if they will be spending it on what they say they're going to be spending it on? Is there a way, or does someone actually audit the check writing books, you know, the outgoing payments in Portland? And if not, I think we should.
Well, it's delineated in the measure itself. It's quite clear what it is to be spent on. I read it previously. It's for education, senior citizens, health care. Right. And so
it sounds great, but how do we know that's what they're going to spend it on?
And well, no, that's true of all spending.
Right.
So it's not particularly true of this measure, and I didn't mean to give that impression. There's nothing hidden about the measure itself. What I'm saying is that we don't have enough journalists covering the legislature.
I love the way you said the post-journalism age.
Well, I think that's where we're at. I mean,
unfortunately, yeah.
I would like to see new models for journalism. I mean, KBOO sends volunteer journalists, and we have a couple of paid staff who occasionally do a news story. But you know, there's just not nearly as many people doing the beats, and it means that city councils and regional councils, legislatures don't get covered, and when they don't get covered, they do, you know, what feels good to them, and that often devolves into a great deal of corruption.
Well, is there a way that you know of that it could be confirmed and verified that they would be spending, that, you know, they do say it passed, and then is there a way that we can look and see if they spent these dollars on those issues?
Well, I guess my answer would be if we have journalists going into the legislature, if we have you know, public affairs programs that point out how you can find that information online, then it can be relatively transparent. There has to be a public interest in it, and that has to be sparked by public affairs programming, I think. So I'm trying to do the right thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks very much.
Thanks for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. 503-231-8187, and Val is on the air.
Oh, hi, Teresa.
Hi.
Oh, what a delight. Okay. We're on the same wavelength. I was in the shower listening because I think my radio. I don't get to hear you all the time, and this is so weird. The last couple of days, I was like, oh, I need to call the station and leave a message for Teresa to tell people not to send it to the Red Cross. And I forgot, and then I meant to leave a message this morning because I'm a little nervous talking on air. And all of a sudden, my dear, oh, just wonderful. You just laid it all out there, exactly. And it just made me feel, woo. that I didn't, that you had it covered. I didn't need to call and mention anything.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, 97 works. Oh, thank you. Anyway, yeah, long time contributing member of KBOO and everybody else. Just send it in, just a little at a time. So thank you very much. Thank you for all the work you do. I really appreciate it. And okay.
Okay, thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
Well, speaking of models for journalism, I do think that possibly this society might want to look at directly paying for journalism. You pay directly for KBOO radio, and it's worked for these 48 years. And let's see, is it 48 years? Yes, more or less. And this model was developed by Lou Church and, or is it Lou Hill? Excuse me. And it was a KPFA model, basically, and has been the basis of support for Pacifica Radio. This is not a Pacifica radio station. We do use their services and pay for their services, particularly Democracy Now! I think that the society might want to look at setting up a transparent structure for getting public money for public journalism. And it's hard to say that because post Citizens United, all electoral processes are grossly corrupted. So this would have to be somehow an exception to that. Of course, you know, KBOO has done pretty well with this sort of thing, I think. But I just want to say generally, without making the specifics right now, maybe we should look at paying for journalism collectively and directly, and maybe that would result in elections of editors or elections of different styles of editors or something like that. I'm not sure. Have been talking about Measure 97, which is very much subject to the post-Citizens United world. Tremendous funds are coming into Oregon to defeat it. The funds are coming from the big corporations who want to continue their grossly extractive processes in Oregon, which is the, when it comes to corporate taxes, the third world country of the United States. Time is 9:50. You're listening to Press Watch. The number to call 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Yaney is on the air.
Hey, Teresa, this is Yaney down in Inyo County in California.
Hi, Yaney.
And the KBOO. I'm going to return to the previous topic about what happened with the Portland police and the city council.
All right.
Vernon was on the air on the previous show, and he quoted something from the Oregon Constitution, which seems to me to say that the police and the city were acting unconstitutionally about the people's rights to protest the agreement with the police department. And it would be really nice if that could be posted on some of the Facebook pages where people are talking about this, because I think that's a good line of defense for the protesters. And so if Vernon could do that, that would be wonderful. I don't know exactly where he was quoting in the Oregon Constitution, but that would probably help with the defense, because it sounds like the rights for the people to address grievances were curtailed yesterday.
That makes sense. It brings up the context in which we speak, which is we are broadcasting on terrestrial and internet, and we are broadcasting in an internet which includes other media, social media like Facebook. And it's interesting how things have changed.
Yeah, I mean, because it's been all over. It's been on, Joanne's got a Facebook presence, and so does Michelle, who was our friend that was there. And that would be really good for him to put that in there, because he obviously knows where it is. And I'm no longer a Oregonian, but I'm still a KBOO member. So,
all right. Well, thanks for listening.
Hello from Inyo County in the High Sierras.
Hello. Maybe I should broadcast louder so you can hear it.
Thank you for the joys of the internet, and many hugs to everybody.
All right then.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Yaney. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I have been talking about Measure 97, again, with the anti-arguments They've been saying that Measure 97 is a tax on total sales, not profits, that would increase consumer costs for all types of products and services. And I responded by saying that that is untrue simply because of the law of supply and demand affecting prices far more than what the basic costs are. And of course, there's more to counter that argument than just that, but that's the biggest one and makes it clearly invalid. They say Measure 97 would be the biggest tax increase in Oregon's history, and they're right about that. They say Measure 97 is deceptive hidden sales tax, which is just a lie. They say 97 would especially hurt Oregon families, farmers, and small businesses who can at least afford higher costs. Quite a deception. They say Measure 97's badly designed tax on sales would result on taxes on top of SAC taxes, which is just a meaningless statement. Any tax anywhere is a tax on top of taxes. Measure 97, they write, would damage Oregon's economy and cause the loss of thousands of local jobs. Hear that crocodile tears argument from big corporations again, that they care about your job. Yeah, sure. They've always cared about your job, and just step on my back and I'll take you across the river. Number to call with your comments and questions, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187, and Steve is on the air.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I am a slightly dissenting voice to some of the comments you just made. My fear is that when we decide that all voting and all elections are corrupted through Citizens United, we sound like the Trump side, because that's exactly what he's saying. And I would suggest that that's not always the case. That does leave open dark money into elections, but to suggest that all elections now are bought is just, I'll use your words, grossly overstated.
I don't think it's grossly overstated. I think Citizens United casts its shadow on everything.
I know you don't think that, but the problem is, by stating that point of view, you are sending out the wrong information, not based on any facts, and that is the main problem that I have with this station. And I do enjoy some of the things that are said, but when you leave facts behind, you become emotion and you sound exactly like the far right.
Well, I think you're absolutely wrong about that. The facts back up the fact that the money has gone into campaigns, and by and large, as I was saying, if you can have a huge campaign and set the stage for the argument, before the argument even takes place, you can have a tremendous effect. And I did cite an earlier case in which the population was bamboozled, essentially, by Portland General Electric into paying for the dismantling of Trojan. So I have the facts on my side in this. And
you have a fact, not all the facts. And that's a problem when you use
You can say that I don't have the facts, but it's just a statement. It's not something that you are backing up, as a matter of fact.
As I said, one fact does not make all facts. And that's the danger of your point of view.
I'm not talking about overbroad statements. What it gets down to basically is contention. And what I find from conservatives, by and large, is that their arguments are not based on facts, but on contention.
Again, look at yourself and what you just said. You said the exact same thing. I have one fact, and now I'm going to say that all elections are distorted and corrupted.
So by that, you've set up a straw man argument. Basically, you've said that I only have one fact and that I claim that my one fact covers for all facts, in which, in fact, I have never said any such thing. And that, again, is part of the contention of the conservative way. It really has to do with intimidation and not with an appreciation of the society as a cooperative group of members.
So
thanks
I'm
for your call. Number to call, 503-231-8187. And Thomas is on the air.
Yes, I have a quick question, I hope. How does Proposition 97 differ or contrast with a value-added tax?
This is a gross sales tax. So a value-added tax takes a certain product and says that when you add value to that, then you pay a certain percentage of it. So it's a more value added is a more specific tax. This one simply says that if you have $25 million or more in sales, then you're going to pay a minimum of your gross receipts, a very small minimum, 2.5, I believe it's 2.5%. And just read the entire text, but you can find that on the web. Just look up Measure 97 text Oregon Measure 97 text. Thanks for calling in. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. We go out to you via 90.7 FM in the Portland greater metro area, other frequencies in Cascadia, and via KBOO.FM to the world and all the ships at sea.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. A couple minutes in front of 10 o'clock. In 15 minutes, join us for Flashpoints, a report from Haiti on the effects of the recent hurricane and the devastating U.S. policy toward the poverty-stricken nation. And an interview with Walter Riley of the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host Jim Schumach interviews writer Brian Kastner about his latest book, All the Ways We Kill and Die. And at 11:30, Words and Pictures previews Underground USA, the symposium paying tribute to the great underground artists of the Pacific Northwest, with guest Patrick Rosencrantz, author of The Artist Himself, illustrator and cartoonist David Chelsea, and Norman Solomon, who worked with David Chelsea on The Portland Scribe. That's all coming up, but first it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre right after this. Take away the pain, the shame, and insecurity. I found the key, so tonight I'm free for my own.
That was sung by a prisoner during a performance in the Oregon State Penitentiary about solitary confinement. This prison performance inspired Within These Walls, a Portland community event. Here Within These Walls on Prison Pipeline, October 17th at 6:30 p.m.
I know why the caged bird sings. This cage is my stage when I am on.